gospel, Jesus greets the apostles in a way they didn't expect, but in a way that meant so much to them. Peace be with you. The Jewish word is shalom. Peace, not in the sense of the absence of suffering or trials, but peace in the sense of being in right relationship. Shalom is Jesus' invitation to be renewed and transformed by God's mercy, by the divine mercy. The apostles were in right relationship with Jesus up through the Last Supper, but then that all got turned upside down in the Garden of Gethsemane. All of those at the Last Supper abandoned Jesus, and only John was there at the foot of the cross. Humanly speaking, they made a mess of everything, and there was no way for them to restore right relationship. But that's always the case. When we sin against God, there is nothing we humanly can do to repair the damage. God has to take the initiative. It is why Jesus was born in Bethlehem. It is why Jesus willingly suffered. It is why he died on the cross. It's why he resurrected. God takes the initiative because we don't have the power to set things right. So Jesus comes to restore right relationship, to restore peace, or maybe establish it for the first time, because I don't think the disciples yet understood who Jesus is, what kind of a Messiah he is, and what kind of peace he comes to bring. Do we? Remember what the two disciples on the road to Emmaus said? That Jesus was a prophet, mighty in deed and word, and that we were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. They were waiting for, hoping for, a political Messiah. But that isn't the kind of Messiah that Jesus is. Is Jesus the kind of Messiah who's going to fix all your problems and cure all your physical ailments? Probably not. Then what kind of Messiah is he? He is one who proclaims something more powerful, more redeeming, more liberating. He proclaims divine mercy. How can the human heart begin to make sense of what we heard in that gospel? When Jesus said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Why? Because Jesus still has the wounds of the crucifixion stamped in his glorified body. The profound truth of Jesus bearing his scars in eternity cannot be overstated. Not only does Jesus not hold the crucifixion against mankind, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing," but rather he shows that the greatest evil actually brought about the greatest possible good. God is showing us that even the greatest evil, rejecting and killing God, is not enough to separate us from the love of God. That's the message of divine mercy. This is God's idea of the Messiah. How does it compare with our idea? How can the human heart truly begin to make sense of what we heard in the gospel? By trying, at least to the best of our ability, to put on the mind of God. Remember, we're made in the image and likeness of God, so it is possible. There's a story about St. Thérèse of Lisieux that perfectly captures this difference between human thinking and divine thinking. At the convent, St. Thérèse was in charge of the novices, and a sister came to her about her efforts to become more holy. The sister lamented, she said, "When I think of how many things I still need to gain," and Thérèse's response was, "When I think of how many things I still need to lose." The answer isn't in building ourselves up, but rather in letting go so that God can have permission to act in our lives. As human beings, we're drawn to this idea of being more successful, more esteemed, more accomplished, more well-known, more exalted in the eyes of the world. We will even do that in holiness, striving to be more holy than the guy next to us. striving to be more holy than those around us. We do that in human endeavors, but that's not how we grow in the image and likeness of God. What did God do? God set aside his glory and emptied himself for our sake. He suffered greatly and was crucified, and then he kept the signs of his defeat with him in heaven. You see, God's Messiah didn't come to execute judgment on the Romans or on any of Israel's enemies, but on the enemy of every one of us, on the enemy of sin. Divine mercy seeks to save what is lost and wandering. This is not a human initiative. This is the divine action where the good shepherd leaves the 99 and goes in search of the lost sheep. And then when he finds it, he brings it back to the Father's house with great rejoicing. This is a divine action where God, the loving Father, welcomes back that son that went off to the foreign country and squandered his inheritance. And not only does the Father welcome him back home, but he runs out to him, embraces him, and then throws a huge party. It's easy to see why the apostles did not yet grasp God's idea of the Messiah. They didn't yet recognize that Jesus was doing something new. The theological language and the timing of the gospel narratives is very important. We hear on the evening of that first day of the week. Think about what happened on the first day of the week in the book of Genesis. God began creation, and then on the seventh day, he rested. Well, our gospel encounter takes place on the eighth day, which is the first day of a new week. So what is happening? This eighth day is the first day of a new creation. The first day of something new. And if you have any doubts, listen to what happens. Jesus breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." Just as God breathed his spirit into Adam on the sixth day. So now in the new creation, Jesus breathes that spirit into the apostles. But that's only the beginning of this new encounter and this new creation. Listen to what Jesus says. He doesn't criticize the apostles. He doesn't try to make them feel guilty for what they did. He doesn't even do that with Thomas after the other apostles said, "We've seen the Lord." No, on the contrary, he reveals the depths of divine mercy for Thomas and for us. "Put your finger here and see my hands, and bring your hand and put it in my side. Don't be unbelieving, but believe." In other words, don't be afraid to probe deeper and deeper into the mystery of God's incredible love for you. The message of divine mercy is enough to soften any stony heart and to thaw any frozen heart, if that heart will have the courage to approach Jesus with its doubts, its fears, its questions, even its indifference. I know that this might sound a little out there. I understand, because this is a radical truth. It's why we celebrate it on this, the eighth day of Easter, that the God out there came down here for you and me. The love of God is no longer just out there, but it permeates and fills every person, place, and event. The God of power and glory has come to save his lowly, sinful creatures, but he won't do it without our consent. Sadly, we won't give our consent because we underestimate what God might do in us and through us. I know I do. That's why I was fascinated by that account from the first reading, that the people carried out the sick into the street so that when Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on them. And they were all cured. They were all cured by the shadow of a man who was open to the power of the risen Christ. The one who proclaims, "I am the first and the last. The one who lives. I hold the keys to death and the netherworld. It doesn't matter how weak or fearful we are, because it's something beyond our power anyway. It's a divine initiative. Jesus is not a political Messiah, but rather that good shepherd who left the 99 in search of the one who was lost. He is the Father that welcomes the wayward child home with great rejoicing. That means that there is the greatest possible reason for me to hope and for you to hope as well. Will you give your consent? Will you let divine mercy bring that same rejoicing into your life? Shalom. Peace be with you.